This podcast is intended for investment professionals. Welcome back to Elgium Talks. I'm Mark Chappell, and this is a very special summer mini-episode. Loads of our listeners got in touch to say how much they'd enjoyed our episode on millennials and their attitude to money. So we thought we'd take this opportunity, while we're joined by some super talented people on work experience for the summer, to ask some of the same questions of Generation Z. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by Blessing Verrill, who's 16, and George Bentley, who's 21. Welcome to Elgium Talks, guys.
Hi, Mark.
Good afternoon, Mark.
And also joining us for our summer special is longtime podcast feature Eliza Grimmond.
Hello, Mark.
Eliza, in our episode we recorded on millennials on money, I feel like we really came to the conclusion that what millennials really valued was experiences over possessions.
I think that's absolutely true of millennials, but is experience dead for Generation Z? In the age of the Insta influencer, what's informing what younger people want and how they spend their money? To kick us off, I thought I'd ask a very simple question. What was the last thing you bought? Blessing, would you like to begin?
So the last thing I bought was a book, actually. It's Click and Collect. I'm going to pick it up after this.
It's a very, very modern spending, like just buy it,
yeah,
e-commerce.
It's quick, easy. You don't have to pay for delivery, obviously. Mm. You don't have to go to the store, look around, find it. So
easy collect option, like quite nearby?
Yeah, 0.9 miles.
0.9, yeah. So wonderfully specific.
Data-driven.
Yeah. And George, what was the last thing you bought?
Yeah, so last thing which I bought other than the essentials was a pair of shoes.
Any particular reason for these pair of shoes? What makes them so special?
Well, they're particularly shiny and well looked after.
Oh, they're these ones. I wouldn't say I can see my face in them, but I can definitely see a reflection of the room. So it's a lovely view of the studio for me.
You weren't queuing around the block for them, though. They weren't limited edition.
These were not, no. These were very much off-the-shelf Clarks. Tried them on in the shop and bought them there.
So quite a traditionalist approach to purchasing versus the e-commerce route.
Yes.
So, guys, to really kind of delve into what Eliza was saying at the beginning and to kind of dive into kind of the relationship that you guys have with money, how do you view, like, at this point, kind of bank accounts and saving and money? What goes through your mind?
For me, very much my bank account is just a number that seems to be ever decreasing. However, you don't really have a concept of what this is. It's not like the traditional amount of gold set aside for you.
So I don't think about money that much because I don't have an income and I don't get regular pocket money. I only really get money when I need it for something specific.
Yeah.
So sometimes I get cash, sometimes I get it into my account. I have a debit card. I don't think about handling money because it's not a large enough number that it needs to be dealt with in any specific or serious way.
Would you say it's a lot more transactional in that sense?
Yeah.
It comes in for a very specific reason of going out again.
Yeah, basically.
And who do you bank with?
Metro Bank. Yeah, it's easy, simple to use. They have an online app as well. So, well, yeah.
And would you say that's kind of important for both of you, like this kind of easiness, the mobile banking kind of first approach, would you say?
Yeah, so for myself, with Santander, I'm more of a traditional bank. However, lots of my friends now are going towards those online banks, which are solely online, such as Monzo. Mm-hmm. Lots of my friends, particularly ones that travel a lot and live overseas, they use it for the foreign exchange rates. Is a lot more beneficial for them, whereas I prefer the traditional Santander as I have a large overdraft facility.
Mm. What you said about the speed and the efficiency of banking is interesting because I read a statistic that said Generation Z, if their attention isn't caught within 8 seconds by any kind of marketing campaign or advertising experience, they're gone. Like,
wow,
so
that's not
short
long.
That's
not long at all.
Yeah.
It's like 8 seconds to kind of not only tell you what the product is, but to convince you to say that this is worth trying is very difficult.
That's about a 4 second reduction on millennials.
Yeah, it is exactly that. So, it's something like 60% of us think won't use a website if it's difficult to navigate or if it takes like more than a few seconds to load. So
do you think app-driven banking has been heavily influenced by challenger banks who have come to market with very simple, easy-to-use propositions that appeal to t- time-strapped Generation Z?
Yeah, I think definitely. Once you start doing it, then the others have to, really. And of course, because 40% of the buying power by 2020 is going to be entirely Generation Z. So it's important to appeal to our generation. So yeah, apps are very important.
So you're a powerful demographic.
Yeah.
But I imagine that's why, you know, so many brands are kind of really investing in these adverts that are targeted towards you. I think, as you were saying, it's so difficult for these companies to build up a brand and any kind of brand loyalty to get your attention. Where would you see kind of your purchasing decisions being driven by adverts? Like, where are you seeing adverts the most?
Personally, I'd like to think that I don't get convinced by adverts. Mm-hmm. However, I do increasingly see myself buying something and then later seeing the advert that sold me it to myself. With my friends, especially, I know that I've been with them. They've seen an advert on, say, Instagram and thought, wow, that shirt looks nice. I'm going to buy that. So it's very much the targeted marketing and advertising. Mm-hmm. Very much affects our generation, I believe.
We're living through such an era of technology-driven change. And I mean, when I think about how it's affected how I buy things, it's not just what I'm buying, but it's the platform on which I'm buying them and the medium in which I'm being communicated with by the brand. And growing up, for me, I remember being served adverts on eBay and Facebook. And I wonder whether the medium that you're using from a technological perspective to communicate with your friends or to purchase things is influencing you and your peers in terms of what you're buying and how you're buying it.
Well, I'd say in a sense the kind of things that are being advertised aren't especially that different on social media to the kind of things you'd see out and about in, I don't know, billboard adverts or more physical things. But I suppose there's an extent to which the way things are advertised online, YouTube, you know, Instagram, Snapchat, does affect the way the buyers see themselves, because in a sense it's like we've become the adverts. You see all of these adverts on Instagram, you'll be scrolling through and the person will be wearing something that you just saw in the advert. So I think in that sense the lines have blurred quite a lot. It's almost like we're doing half of the advertising for the companies. I think it's become a lot easier.
I think especially with some of my peers who are trying to make it as influencers on Instagram, you do find yourself opening up a caption which they've put on and the ream of hashtags which they've put on, sort of tagging various different clothing brands just to try and get sponsorship, as sort of going back to what Eliza said earlier, is taking away from the experience kind of thing and going focusing more on material purchases.
I think that's such an interesting point, that it's coming back to that kind of ownership and the kind of really kind of taking, whether it's clothes or perhaps even technology, of really becoming, of building that status through things, but things that can be presented back to the world via the social media. Would you say that's kind of how you see it, or have I missed something perhaps?
Yeah, I think there's a misconception that my generation is very much focused on more experiential products, that you'd buy things that kind of, you know, enhance your own understanding of the world, how you understand yourself, all of that kind of thing. But I think that there's a growing kind of obsession with more materialistic concerns. And so, yeah, it's very much about promoting your image. So we'll buy all of these products and then, again, use it for status. It's about how many likes you can get, how many followers you have. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Would you say it's kind of an individualistic way of building up your own brand, which is slightly detracting from maybe the classic marketing team's objective of generating brand loyalty towards a specific company?
I think in a sense, yeah, because obviously there's heightened individualism and this emphasis on promoting yourself. But at the same time, I'm not entirely sure that brand loyalty matters because of the sheer amount of money that people are spending on things like clothes, for example. If a company like, I don't know, Topshop doesn't have customers that aren't coming back regularly. They constantly have other customers who've moved from, I don't know, H&M, and who'll be kind of jumping around, testing out, buying from lots of different shops at once. So I'm not entirely sure that it will detract from the business side, but I don't know the statistics, so...
That's really interesting. So we've heard a little bit about how people are spending their money, but what about how people are getting the money to spend? What's the first thing that comes to your mind, George, when you think about investing and why?
For me, I've just left university and things. I'm starting to think, what do I want to be investing in for the future? Traditionally, you'd be thinking of your houses and your cars, that sort of thing. Also, a rainy day fund. However, with cars, I moved to London recently, originally from Yorkshire. A car was much more important. Now, with the public transport down in London, it's not so important for myself.
And Blessing, what is it that first comes to mind when you think of investing?
Big companies. I don't think about it really in relation to me personally. I haven't thought about it, so...
It's hard often to make that connection between what seems like such a theoretical idea of investing in the stock market or shares or bonds to actually, can this affect my savings or can my savings be in such a way?
Yeah.
George, what methods have really kind of jumped out to you already so far?
So, having not earned enough money yet myself, I'm only really now starting to look at what I would be investing in. So whether that would be down the line a house or I suppose once I get into employment, I'd be looking more to putting money into a pension for the future. But in a more short term, like you said, ISAs, personally, I don't know enough about them at the moment, although after spending a week at LGM, I feel like I understand a little bit more about how various funds might work and what I would be interested in investing in.
Absolutely. And as you've both mentioned already, you've both got current accounts, but do either of you have a savings account alongside that?
I did.
In recent years, there's been a renewed focus on financial education in schools. In fact, on a personal note, one of our colleagues has just left to become a financial coach. How much financial education has been delivered to you through school?
So there's nothing formal, but we have something every term called a focus day, which chooses one area of society, essentially, just to focus on and educate us throughout the day. And there have been one or two focus days that have tried to approach the subject of banking, personal finance, but it's never been very in-depth and it's largely independent research. So I wouldn't say that schools have made any dedicated attempt to try and educate students on finance, banking, investments. I think it's kind of bad, to be honest.
And when you're learning maths at school, do you ever see the link between what you're studying and a future investment? Is it ever practical?
They teach us about interest rates and we do calculations on that, but they don't try to link it in any very obvious way. They don't try and link the external, you know, reality to everyday maths we do in class. So not really.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Most of the education I've received in investments and finances are really from my own doing or from parents, my brothers particularly. Other than that, I don't think there's that much support in education into what you're learning and what to do with your money, where best to invest, etc.
Sounds like the curriculum needs to be updated a little bit.
So what is it in school about perhaps finance and investing that you really wish was taught?
I wish they familiarised us with the terminology so that, you know, any information online would be more accessible. It gives you kind of that stepping stone or building block to foundational. All we'd really need would be a foundational understanding of it to educate ourselves further.
The big thing about educating with money and things is to be able to talk about it and to try and destigmatise talking about money. If you're having money problems, talk to someone about it, because if you can talk to someone, that they might be able to help you, give you advice, and hopefully educate you so you know how better to invest your particular money fund.
Well, I think that's such a nice note to end on, that really it's about having that good foundation of knowledge so you can make more informed decisions for yourself, but also having that freedom to be able to talk to people and be a little bit more open about money, saving and investing. Once more, thanks to you both for joining us. Thank you so much, George.
Thank you, Mark.
And thank you, Blessing.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more, be sure to listen again next week for more Elgium Talks. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.